When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
And today we're talking about Season 6, Episode 3, titled Rock and Hard Place. X and Y, blanks
X and, Y,
and
yep.
Other blank.
Just about to comment on that, wondering if that's going to be a theme.
I mean, they're definitely doing a thing. Yeah, this is like, I remember way back in like season two, they were doing like pimento and risotto and
You got that look on your face like you're not sure if what you're saying is right.
I know pimento was one, but they had all the episodes that ended with O.
Yeah, that's true.
And now they're doing another thing. I'm pretty sure a lot of these seasons have done stuff like that.
It's just easier. It's like whenever you're naming cats at the shelter, new cats when they come in, you just have to get creative after a while. And that's why you end up with like biscuits and gravy as brother and sister.
Sure. Yeah.
Yes.
And if you find another one, I guess you name it sausage.
Mm-hmm.
This is a TV thing. Like TV has long done this. I think Seinfeld uses the as one of theirs. Like they just do like the soup Nazi or
right. The
I don't know, the rye.
These are some good topical references that we're making, but Friends also it was always the one with
right.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
So which is actually just kind of brilliant. That one is.
Yeah, I like when they do that. I don't know. It's a little flair, a little creative flair for the stuff.
I'm also not sure if most people actually give two shits about
the
title of an individual episode of television.
I never cared until I started covering television. Yeah. Until I had to say it on a podcast. Right. I never cared.
That makes sense.
But what do you think, or what do you think Rock and Hard Place is all about?
I mean,
the title.
It's about a man. It's about a man with two arms who...
This is starting like a Big Lebowski riff, but okay.
That was the vibe I was going for. Thanks for catching on to it. No, he had one arm. No, he had two arms, for sure. And it's about him having to make a difficult choice.
It seems to me like it's no choice at all, right? Like
there
just isn't a choice here.
And
that's the point of Rock
and
a Hard Place, right?
Yeah.
Because there are no good choices at that point.
Your choices are Rock and Hard Place.
Yeah.
Not really. You're just stuck between them.
So what'd you think of the episode?
I mean, broke my damn heart, but other than that.
Yeah.
Other than that, I think it was a good send off of one of my favorite characters, at least. A character who, his line of work is a little shady and not really something to write home about, literally. But he's also, he seemed like he was a decent person otherwise. Mm-hmm. He treated other people well, at least, unless someone told him not to.
Yeah.
In the case of like beating up his friends.
Or stealing the baseball cards.
Or stealing baseball cards.
A dumbass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the vampire.
Price. I remembered his name.
Price.
Shortly after we stopped.
Yes.
I apologize to all the Prestons and the Chesters or whatever I said out there. Didn't get any emails from Prestons or Chesters. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Must be an uncommon name.
Apparently.
Or they're the silent majority.
Sure. I agree. I thought this episode was great. It's a good send-off for Nacho. And it kind of seems inevitable, sort of looking at the hole he was
the
digging himself.
Right.
And it's one of those things, I was listening to the Insider podcast this week, and they were talking about how a lot of television shows in this moment will do the big fake out, right? Like they'll tell you, they'll imply, okay, this character is going to go die and sacrifice themselves for something. And then they'll have the big moment where they twist everything and they get out scot-free and and how they just purposely didn't want to do that here. And I think it worked really well because they did kind of have me going, okay, there must be another plan here. And I was like that all the way up until Mike and him have the moment in the van where like Nacho looks out and gives Mike a nod and Mike gives him a nod. And I'm like, oh, that's the I'm never going to see you again nod. Yeah. And I was like, oh, man.
It was interesting. They were even talking about, we're jumping way ahead, but in the last scene, one of the build-up scenes, they were setting up that Victor was going to shoot Nacho in the back, basically, as he was running away. And I was not willing to believe that that was actually going to happen. And hey, good on me, because that is not what happened. Tragically, that is not what happened.
No, and I like all the justifications they give in the Insider podcast.
Oh, absolutely. That's a good listen, this episode in particular. If you want to hear a lot of Michael Mando just being the nicest person ever, put him in more stuff, people. He needs to be in more things. He's a great actor, and he seems like a nice person.
Yeah, that's the thing I get from everybody who works on these projects with like Vince and Tom. They're kind of just good people, it seems. You know, just you don't hear a lot of scandal coming out of the set of Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul. It's all it seems very, I don't know, collegiate is not the term, right? It's like there's a good camaraderie there and everybody seems nice. And so it's good.
It's good.
I thought the episode was good too. Very good. I believe the word you're looking for, if you were to sum it up, is audacious.
Hold on. Let me go through my complicated string of facial expressions, and then I will kiss you.
Okay.
That's Yep.
Sounds good. Bring it in. Bring it over here.
Bring it in. Bring it in. You haven't seen Encanto.
No, I haven't. Anyway, I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was. I have one complaint. It's up front, so you're gonna are gonna go, oh God, here we go. He's complaining about it. But I literally have one scene that I thought was not needed or kind of pointless or not as good as the rest of it. But the rest of it is very, very good.
I'm assuming. Are you gonna like raise a flag whenever we get to that in the recap?
I will. Okay. Absolutely. And speaking of which, I think we should get into the recap.
Yes, sounds good.
But first, let's take a quick break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on a series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right. We open the episode in the desert. We pan over a patch of scrub to a blue flower and a shard of glass.
Hold on. Hold on. I got to get the flag out here.
Oh, okay.
And I
got
to run it up the flagpole and see who's going to salute, because I did not like this scene.
It was too long, wasn't it?
It's too long, and I don't think it says anything. Like, I've seen this scene twice now. I saw it once out of context. Like, ooh, what the hell is this? A piece of glass on the ground and a blue flower. And then I saw it the second time in context, knowing what the piece of glass was, and I still didn't care for it. I just like, what does it add to Nacho's death?
It's poetic. I think it's meant to be poetic and very symbolic. You know, we have that color blue showing up again, so you know that death is happening. It's coming soon.
That's
death and innocence.
Yeah, I didn't need a minute and a half of panning over. I think the shot is very cool. I know, it's me exaggerating, but I think the shot is super cool. I think like what they're doing with the camera and the foreground and background stuff, especially when they pan up to the mountains.
Yeah, that's nice.
I think it's very cool looking. Mm-hmm. It's just like, what is the point? Why do I need to see this? Especially the second time around, I'm looking for meaning and I'm like, well, yeah, that's the thing he used to free his hands. It's the thing that let him go out on his own terms, I guess. But like, is that interesting? Second time around? No.
Second time around, sure. It feels a bit like just kind of set dressing, maybe sort of setting the mood for where we're going to end up at the end of this episode. It is a little self-indulgent, maybe.
Yes.
I think that might be your end point.
Yeah, and I definitely have my problems with this show's overindulgence of its own style sometimes, but
I felt a slightly different way seeing it for the second time. It actually meant more to me. I was annoyed by it the first time I watched it, because there are a lot of things that the camera is panning over, and it's very close up, and it's like the desert, so everything's just one color. You have different textures from different roots of the plants there, but it is kind of just one color. So in that first run through, I was like, oh my God, what's happening? But in the second time, he tried to make it courageous. His sort of courageous death was very fresh in my mind. So it felt a little more poignant to me.
Gotcha. And then it's something they do often. And sometimes I like it. Sometimes I don't. Mm-hmm. I think like the stuff with the ants on the ice cream is pretty good in context. But in Breaking Bad, they did this occasionally and it really paid off. Like I think that episode where Walt meets Tuco for the first time and goes in and blows up his headquarters or whatever with fulminated mercury. The beginning of that episode. It starts when Walter White is still like frumpy school teacher dude with the longish hair.
Right.
And the opening shot of that episode is him walking out with a totally shaved head as an explosion goes off behind him. And he does the cool guys don't look at explosions thing. Mm-hmm. And you're like, how did we get here? And that kind of works for me.
Yeah.
There was no like, how did we get here moment with this. It's literally just, if you've seen the episode or after you see the episode, you understand what it means. But it doesn't mean all that. It didn't mean all that much to me, anyway.
I'll say this, too. The dirt did seem to be kicked up a little bit. That very, very well could be his grave, on top of everything else.
Could be. I do wonder how much time has passed because, yeah, the scene is very different, right?
The glass
there's no
is
blood
not
on
like,
the glass. The,
yeah, it's and it's covered very, in it's dirt. It's got dirt on it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a flower next to it. It's almost in a different position. Like, Nacho doesn't die in a field of tumbleweeds, right? He dies kind of in a dirt patch. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know if that glass has been blown around, if it's moved, if it's just a very long time has gone by.
Right.
And this is like Gene days or something.
Yeah. Like, right.
This could be years later. We don't really know.
That's
but
true.
Yeah, I don't know. Not my favorite scene. That's the only time I'm going to say that in this episode because the rest of it is very good.
And now we have spent about 8 times longer than the scene actually takes talking about it. So how do you feel about that?
Well, it's
amazing,
a lot easier
right?
to complain about stuff than it is to praise it.
It is to make things.
Unless you're on the Insider podcast.
Seems like they have fun there.
True.
All right. Right after this, we're going into the title sequence. And after the title sequence, we are with our man Nacho. Right where we left him, actually, in episode 2, his getaway truck is shot, literally. You're welcome for that callback. So he successfully hides in a nearby abandoned oil truck, and eventually he does get cleaned up and make a couple calls.
Get in the goo!
Get in the goo!
This was so awful and so amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Just watching him under the skin his way into that goo, that was delightful.
I do love scenes like this. I think that the tension is so high, where especially like, and they did this in Breaking Bad. They do this. This is kind of one of their hallmarks. They push characters beyond what you think they're capable of because other characters are so relentless. Like having the cousin, like he knows that if he just stays in this truck, the cousins are going to come check every square inch of it.
Well,
and he's
for one
be
thing, it's like, yeah, it's like 50 feet away from the road, but.
Right, yeah. Right, where his truck broke down. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he knows, like, he's got to get in the goo.
Yeah, it's the only thing that's going to work.
Terrible. And it pushes him to a new place, right? I don't think even maybe he thought he was capable of this.
That's about... I think you could maybe consider this his lowest point in many ways.
Yeah.
Physically, but also just mentally, he... is really having to go through a hell of a sacrifice here. And we see once he finally gets out and he's barfing up his guts, that was obviously like actual oil.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I listened to Insider. They said it was just some special effects goo, whatever.
Oh, of course, yeah. When
obviously, they can't put him in real oil. But yeah, in the show, it's supposed to be oil. And it's... there's such a great shot here, too, when he goes under for the very first time. Like, right after that, they kind of sit there with him for a second, and you can hear, like, the cousin climbing the ladder and walking across the top of it, and then you see him stick his head down, and they just stay on that shot of the goo settling.
And the whole time, I'm thinking, like, man, your heart is still beating. You have, like, micromotor twitches that you don't even know are happening in your body. How are you so certain that you can stay still?
I mean, I'm not sure he is certain. He just knows that he has to do this
to do something,
or else he's dead. And worse, right? It's not that he's dead. It's that his dad is potentially dead or that he's going to have to give up information on Gus and Gus will go after his dad. It's, this is all for his dad, but.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It was a level that I didn't think he could go to.
Through the course of this scene, we do see him also, it's worth mentioning, make a call to Mike. And that is his side is the other side of the conversation that we saw in the previous episode.
Yeah. Says, it's for you, Gus.
That's for you, Gus.
Let's talk to you.
And he speaks to him very disrespectfully.
Yeah, before that, I was thinking about the timing of this, right? Because if like Nacho doesn't call his dad, if he just calls Mike directly, I think Mike doesn't answer. Because Mike only answers his phone because he needs to, otherwise Nacho's going to die, right?
Right.
Because Nacho's been trying to get a hold of him and he hasn't been answering.
He's also got a gun to his head, so it's a good... de-escalation tactic.
For sure. And, you know, Walter White has used this many times as well. It's kind of his go-to move. But yeah, he gets one call into his father, which his father doesn't hang up on him, right? I think the last time they talked, his father said, hey, I got an offer for my business to buy it. And he thought that Nacho like had something to do with that and was paying for it with drug money.
This is when his dad showed up to his house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And looked at all of his many riches.
Yeah, that was pretty late last season, I think.
It was, yeah.
But yeah, that it's so, you know, it's kind of cool that he even said anything to him. Just hang up.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm happy for Nacho as a character that he got to have this last moment with his dad, even if only one side of the conversation actually knew what was going on.
Yeah.
This sounded like very much like a conversation that they'd had many times before, where Nacho's in a bad place, mm-hmm. and he calls his dad just because, like, he needs some kind of emotional support, and his dad's like, you know what to do. Go to the police. I've told you this all along. Okay, take care of yourself. Bye.
Yeah.
It's like the typical, it's like the typical call to your dad, right?
I guess. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know either. I don't have one.
Great. But if I were to guess, like, I don't know. I mean, it's weird, right? Because Nacho's trying to protect his dad. Mm-hmm. He can't go to the cops at this point. Like, it's strange because every side wants him dead. And this is the rock and hard place setup, right? Both sides want him dead. Gus wants him dead. Hector wants him dead. If he goes to the cops, they're just going to kill his dad. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't want that to happen. So he can't go to the cops. He's stuck.
Yeah.
Completely stuck. There's no way out of this.
He does about the only thing he could have done in the situation, which is cut a deal. A deal that he doesn't benefit from, but the one person he cares about on the planet
exactly.
does. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So I don't know. I like it. There's also a moment with Mike that I like. I think this was in the last episode where, you know, Mike says, oh, I promise, you know, nobody's going to hurt your dad. Mm-hmm. If you honor your deal. He says, well, I want to hear from Mike. And then Mike assures him the same thing. And Nacho's like, why can I trust you or whatever? And he says, like, 'cause anybody who wants to hurt your dad's gonna have to come through me. And I feel like that's an implicit threat against Gus in that moment, like to his face.
Absolutely,
too.
Yeah.
And I don't know, nobody ever accused Mike of being soft, but wow, that's rough. That's a big deal, Mike.
I think he has to have seen just the way he treats Nacho. He has seen his innate, very buried down deep, but his innate goodness.
Yeah, yeah. His fairness something.
Just cares about people in a way that maybe it's not normal for people in his line of business to feel.
Oh, about Nacho. I thought you were talking about Gus, because Gus has that sense of fairness
to an extent, but he's also extent. His fairness, it does not, I think we discussed this on the last episode, he's not above cutting a bitch, as we know.
Yeah, and Nacho here, like, he could have let Nacho out, mm-hmm. but he wasn't going to, so that's not super fair.
Wasn't in his own best interest. I think that's the biggest thing with Gus, honestly, is just protecting that business.
Totally.
And doing whatever he has to do that. In the next scene, we go to Kim and Jimmy's apartment, where Jimmy is mind mapping the Howard plan on the back of a framed print, like you do. And they decide to bring in Huel for a valet scam. Scare quotes.
Trying to figure out this new evolving relationship between them.
Seems complicated. Seems very complicated.
It is. And I look at Jimmy and I can't tell, like, is he just, it seems to me like he's just going along with Kim's mm-hmm. plan here, and he doesn't want to do this, but she wants to get, like, ultimate revenge on Howard. And it's not just like, oh, I want to bring Howard down. It's like, I want to make this personal. Like just saying, hey, we could use the real car. And Jimmy's like, that's a bad idea for 1,000 different reasons. Mm-hmm. We get caught 1,000 different ways. And she's like, no, but there's something like poetic about it. She just wants to get an extra fuck you on Howard is the thing. Like, if we can use his real car, it all feel like we got him even better.
Sure.
And now Jimmy's just going along with it, even though he knows that some of this is a bad idea.
It's a really interesting evolving dynamic with them this season as opposed to last season. Last season, I feel like Kim was the one who was kind of on her heels the whole time, like just trying to kind of catch up to Jimmy and also you. Where this time around, it's completely different. And it's so interesting that that would be the dynamic in the final season.
Right.
As opposed to the other way around. I think maybe a lot of us were expecting it to be the other way around.
Yeah.
Either from like innate sexism or I don't know.
Well, I mean, Kim was just the better person the entire time is the thing.
She was the straight and narrow person. Yeah, yeah,
totally. And now, and I think there's like some, I don't know, we can talk about it later with, is it the DA, Erickson?
Assistant DA, yeah.
Assistant DA, yeah. Later with her, we'll talk about it more. But like, yeah, I feel like Jimmy is searching for a way out. Like him saying, hey, I can't get these keys in time and it's not going to work out on the 18th like we wanted it to.
Yeah.
And then her suggesting to use his real car, he's like, ah, damn it, you're right, we could do that. But there's 1,000 different ways that could go wrong, so maybe we shouldn't. And he's like kind of looking for a way out. And I don't know if it's because he doesn't want to take down Howard specifically or just he doesn't want to be scamming right now. Like he got so shaken up by what happened with Lalo.
I think it might be a little bit that, yeah. Like this is, it's too, he feels too hot right now. He wants to maybe put his head in the sand. And and Kim is just not giving him that option.
Nope.
At all. Next, we are going with Kim to the courthouse where, as we were about to discuss, the assistant DA pulls her aside and tells her she's learned about Jimmy's cartel connection, basically.
Yeah.
That's a, oof, boy. I don't know if this comes directly from Jimmy dropping the name Lalo in the last episode, but it must,
I think,
right?
So,
it's got to have something to do with
that. I think they spell out the connection there.
Okay.
Pretty sure, anyway.
I thought that was the case, too, but... I was willing to be talked out of it.
Yeah, no, they want him to rat on the cartel because maybe the attorney-client privilege would not hold up.
Privilege.
Or was, you know, made under duress or something.
Right.
It's a good scene, and it starts in a weird place, right? Because Kim comes up to Erickson and says, hey, I found this arrest record for one of my clients.
Got this old
during
ass,
discovery.
This
here you go.
Old. Shit.
And she's like, why are you giving me this?
Right.
We never would have found this. It seems like you're doing your client a disservice or whatever. But she's playing by the books, right? She's like strictly following the rules.
She is.
And I don't know if that's because she wants to keep her like work and scam lives separate. She's trying to go straight and narrow still on the actual legit side of the law. Or... if this is just like a challenge to make it harder for herself, because she says, we'll beat you on the merit anyway. Because Kim's like that, right? Like
she can be a little competitive, yeah.
Yeah, she can dig her heels in on stuff, and especially when she goes to like some of the public defenders or whatever and says, hey, I need 20 cases. And they're like, 20 cases is more than anybody can handle. Why do you want these? Oh, and I want them to be juvenile arrests and felonies and stuff. And it's like... you're just making your life hard.
Basically.
And I feel like that's what she's doing. And I don't know if it's like to punish herself or challenge herself or what. Mm. But it feels to me like she's trying to set the bar for herself very high on the legit side of her life.
It's an interesting angle. Yeah.
The other thing about that is I guess it's maybe she's trying to make up for the bad she knows she's
there
doing,
we go.
Right,
that's,
with Howard.
Yes. I think there is a little bit of guilty conscience happening here.
So she plays by the rules.
Really play by the rules on this one side. This is like her law baby that she's trying to protect. This thing that this is why she's scamming Howard. She doesn't, it seems like she does want to get some personal revenge against Howard.
Totally.
But also she just wants that money. She wants the sandpiper money.
She does.
So that she can do her thing and feel good about things for the rest of her life and just kind of push all this other stuff under the rug. Oh, that wasn't that big of a deal. That was nothing.
Well, we'll see how that works out.
I know. Yeah, I don't... the ends justify the means is never an amazing argument for a good person to make.
Definitely not. And I do think she knows, you know, that what the assistant DA says later about Jimmy knows it's wrong.
Yeah.
That we had a monster on the hook and we let him
you
get loose.
You can tell
loose
she's feeling guilty. It's all over her face.
Yeah.
But she's still not giving her anything.
Right.
She's still playing it. Next, we're in what you could consider the courthouse of chickens. The chicken cooler?
Hmm.
No, that doesn't work.
I was going to say, it's not a chicken truck. It's a nacho truck now.
It is a nacho truck. Oh, my God. I want nachos. So bad. Queso? Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're in the chicken cooler where Mike pulls Nacho out of the floor of a chicken truck like a big old drug bag. They share a drink before Mike gets to work on his face because it's too pretty.
Yeah, gotta rough him up a little bit.
Yeah, can't have those big, pretty doe eyes looking nice.
Yeah, I like a couple of things about this. They feed him a, you know, I don't know if it's a steak or whatever, but they feed him a very nice meal. And I very much
plastic cutlery, the bastards.
Yeah.
If you're going to give him meat, give him a real
knife.
That's torture. That was pre-torture.
You didn't have to beat him up. You could have just said, we made him eat with plastic utensils.
We made him eat a medium rare steak with plastic utensils, and we gave him water to drink.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And whiskey.
That's true.
Some nice whiskey.
Did give him whiskey. He has a whiskey.
That's the thing, though. I feel like this is a last meal, right? This is like an inmate on death row getting their final meal.
In hindsight, before they're executed. Oh, absolutely it is. Yeah.
And then the drink between Mike and Nacho serves two purposes, right? And you could think, okay, well, they want Nacho to get a little drunk, get numb, because when they beat him, it's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to hurt Mike just as much. That's the thing. Like, he shares the drink, right? He doesn't just say, hey, drink this so you won't feel anything. No, he also drinks because I don't think he's super keen on doing this to Nacho.
I don't know if it was Tyrus or Victor who told him that Nacho's face was too pretty. And the look that crossed his face whenever he was told that information was just like pure disgust. Like, are you fucking kidding me? And he's like, no, listen, I'll do it. It's fine.
Well, yeah. And I think he knows that he'll do it right.
He'll do it right. And probably the least painful way.
Exactly.
I guess.
Yeah. Like if I don't know,
he'll very softly punch
Victor
him in the eye.
Yeah. Maybe hit him with a stake. I don't know. Maybe if Victor gets a hold of him, he does a lot worse, right?
Maybe.
He breaks things and, gets nastier.
Baby on baby action. You hate to see it. Two baby-faced babies.
Yep.
And we're cutting back to the Jimmy and Kim storyline afterward. And we're in the HHM parking garage, where Huel makes a copy of Howard's car key on the sly, and then he meets Jimmy in his car for a little heart-to-heart.
In hindsight, this is super obvious, and I should have realized this is how you would do it if you don't have, like, a truly professional setup. But I had no idea you could duplicate a key by just having a drill with two bits. Or like, a depth finder, essentially, on one side, and a drill bit on the other side.
Yeah.
But that makes total sense.
Totally. It's not going to be an amazing key. It's probably going to stick every once in a while, but it'll get the job done. Yeah.
Yeah. Seems like there's some skill involved too, and some time. Oh man. It's a race against time. Seems like that guy's a fast one.
Yeah. He was like, a kid looks fast. Like, yeah.
A lot faster than I am. So you need to hurry, dude.
Yes.
Yep. It was good stuff.
Yeah. That was a good scene. That was cool. Just the idea of using a drill press for making a key, like you said.
And the circuit the board keychain ridiculousness remote that he comes back with.
The world's biggest universal remote.
Yeah.
Like, boy.
Because if people are wondering, like, this is
technology.
One of those electronic keys, right, that has the code that, like, he's duplicating the key fob, essentially.
He is, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that he needed the key fob. And not just the key. I wonder how that's going to come into play in the future.
Well, some of those cars require a digital connection to use the key without setting the alarm off and stuff.
Even in the 90s?
This is 2000s.
Sure, 2000s?
That's like 20 years ago at this point, or close to it.
Yeah, so. Trying to remember. I don't know. I've never had a nice car.
Fancy?
I don't
know, right, that's the thing. Like, Howard drives a very nice car.
Of course,
so.
Yeah.
If anybody's going to have it, he's going to have it.
The bells and whistles, yeah. So maybe you need that many buttons.
I guess. I want to know what 1 through 3 and 7 through 0 do.
probably
an
nothing.
End call. I felt like it was just a telephone. Yeah, just a telephone dial or
did it
whatever.
Actually, did it have end call? Was it, this a jury-rigged telephone?
I know it had more than just the 10 numerals, yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I just assumed it was like a TV universal remote. I don't know why that would be the case.
It might have been. It might have been like a back button or something. I don't know.
I've lost a few remotes in my day. I've had to get universal remotes, and they're always chunky and terrible.
Yep.
They suck. Or they were. Back when I was still young enough to be losing things. Anyway.
Hewell asks him about, like, why the hell are you doing this, right? You've got, you're a lawyer, you're making tons of money, your wife's a lawyer, she's making tons of money. You don't need to be doing this. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing it? And I feel like when Jimmy says, like, hey, within a few months, there are going to be a lot of happy people, he's...
That's Kim's line that he's given him. It's not his own line.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out exactly who he's talking about. Obviously, he's talking about the people who are involved in the Sandpiper lawsuit, right? Mm-hmm. Like Doris
also...
or whatever her name is. Like all those people are going to be super happy, right?
Sure. But I think he's referring more to Kim's future clients. The
I was
little,
also wondering about that.
The
yeah.
little guys that she's going to be helping.
Yeah, with her pro bono practice that mm-hmm. she plans on doing. Yeah, yeah. I think he's thinking of all those people.
Probably. He has to be thinking of those people. Otherwise, I don't think he'd be doing what he's doing right now.
Fair.
Also, Kim asked him, so there's that. We follow Kimmy. Kimmy?
Kimmy? Who's Kimmy?
why'd you make them sound so similar?
We just need a Tim. Timo.
Timmy! No, we don't.
Timma.
Timma. Jimma.
Timma, Jim, and Kim. Timma, Jimmy, and Kim. Well, that'd be confusing.
Mm-hmm. Drink your wine, sir. Next, we follow Jimmy back home. Kim tells him Lalo's dead and everything that happened with Suzanne. She's the assistant DA at the courthouse. And she asks if he wants to be a friend of the cartel or a rat. And that is a leading question. That's a question that tells you exactly how you need to answer, isn't it? Who wants to be a rat?
So I look at this from two angles, right? I look at this as Kim and or Kimmy leading Jimmy to the answer that she wants him to give, mm-hmm. which is to be a friend of the cartel. And then I also look at it as, like, as someone who watches a lot of gangster movies, I know the rats don't live very long.
I know that too, yeah.
And so some of that is like, do you want to be a friend of the cartel or do you want to be a rat, the guy who they're going to come at and kill?
Do you want to be on the run for the next?
Right.
And that's, spoiler alert, that's kind of what happens anyway, but.
Well, so let me throw this out there. I know we have people who practice law listening to this podcast. Doug L. is out there somewhere, and you know he sent an email in that we didn't get gathered for this session. But
oops.
Doug L., if you're out there, or any other lawyers, what is Jimmy's responsibility here? Because I know that there are people who are out there who are murderers, who are thieves, who are just criminals of the worst kind.
Murderers and thieves on the same level.
Rapists.
You heard it here first.
People who steal from vending machines. And those are thieves also. People who set fires. Should I list all the crimes?
No.
People who vandalize things, hit mailboxes with baseball
anyway.
Bats. So those people are out there, right? The terrible people. Uh-huh. All of those people get lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Bad people have to be able to hire lawyers because we have the whole due process thing. You can't just say, well, you're a bad person. You don't get representation, legal representation.
Mm-hmm.
What is Jimmy's responsibility here? Because being a lawyer for the cartel, in my mind, is just something that someone has to do.
It's another client.
Yeah. Right. It's a client. It's not whether he knew or didn't know or whatever. It's like, mm-hmm. well, no, he's the lawyer for these very bad people.
Right.
Who is paid to defend them, paid to make the best case he can. But like, he doesn't have a responsibility to tell the law, like, hey, no, actually, these people can, like, confess to the crime.
No.
His responsibility is to his client to try and defend them.
Yeah, exactly. I think when Kim and Suzanne were talking earlier in the episode, I think Suzanne was just trying to offer an out to Jimmy just in case he had somehow, just in case he was panicking about his involvement with the cartel. She wanted Kim
in case he just wanted out.
Yeah, exactly. So I think she was kind of extending an olive branch before the hammer, you know?
Yeah.
The hammer of the law.
But what is the hammer here? The hammer is toothless, right? The hammer.
Well, we know that Saul Goodman's going to keep practicing for a while. So yeah, it's pretty toothless.
I mean, that's just what I'm, but the lens I'm looking at it through is like, he represents bad people. Lawyers do that all the time. Yep. And they're, as far as I'm aware, not under any obligation to come out, like to ditch their client or say like, yeah, these are bad people who did bad things. Yeah, and
you're giving the same argument that Kim gave to Suzanne.
Right.
Which is, he's their lawyer.
Yeah.
Oh, what are you going
to
do?
So, I don't know. You can't really arrest him for being the lawyer, being hired to do his job by bad people. So, yeah, it was a weird argument, but
it was a weird argument.
It makes sense the way you said it, like give him an out in case he's scared and wants to get out.
Suzanne, I do feel like, I'm sorry, what's her last name? Erickson?
Yeah.
Okay. Erickson. I'll give her the benefit of referring to her by the last name like I did, like I would with a dude. She seems like a decent person. She has definitely been putting up with a lot for both Kim and Jimmy.
Oh, Hugh Babineau.
Yes. Yes.
Kashada thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hugh?
Huel.
Huel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to see it. Okay. Oh, yeah. There was one more thing I did think was interesting. The scene begins with Kim smoking inside instead of outside. Is that the first time we've seen that?
I want to say yes. She usually goes to the balcony.
Yeah.
Because I remember her out there smoking, drinking, and they threw bottles and stuff off there.
Right.
But yeah, it might be the first time inside.
Oh, naughty Kim. Naughty Kim.
Shows you.
This slide.
This is totally like Walt's clothes, right? Changing over the course of his whole thing.
His pork pie hat.
Well, his shirts, like getting into that red wine-colored shirt is just like...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
A turning point for that character. I feel like this, yeah, you could be onto something. This is kind of signifying the turning point for Kim.
Yep. Right. In the next scene, we are setting up the final scene. We're back at the chicken trailer, where Gus, Mike, and Nacho rehearse before meeting the Salamancas. Mm-hmm. And everybody makes sure that they know what their roles are. So, Nacho is supposed to still have his hands be bound, and he's supposed to just, like, run at the desert?
Victor. Yeah.
Who is going to gun him down? Or past him. I think he's supposed to run like, at him and past him, and then Victor's going to turn and shoot him.
Yeah.
After he gives all this information, which actually isn't false information, but it's not useful information, to the Salamancas. Turns out they already know who the gun people were. They just don't know who hired them.
And I was still like, okay, how are they going to get, how is he going to get out of this?
I was too.
Like, there must be part of the plan, right? Fake bullets.
Yeah. I thought that Mike is there. Mike, like, demanded that he be there, basically. And we see him setting up in his, like, little sniper roost like he does. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, who is he going to take out to try to save Nacho?
And how? Like,
yeah,
that doesn't go anywhere good. If if he has to shoot somebody, the jig seems to be up.
Yeah, I mean, and he's going to piss off both sides, like, immediately.
Yeah, so.
I know, but I'm right there with you. I was still like, he's going to get through this.
Right, but the most obvious thing is he's not, which they end up doing, so it makes sense.
Totally. The very, very last shot of this scene was really poignant. There was some kind of reflection. I don't know if they're like the table was wet or something, but Nacho looks down at something. Not move away from the mic when I do that. I'm actually looking down. Sorry. Yeah. I'm a very visual person. He looks down at his reflection, and behind him he is framed in blue. Just blue. Mm. Yeah. Didn't catch that the first time around. But this time I'm like, there were so many signs.
Yeah. He's very in a very blue underground room in his final meal setting too.
Yeah, that's probably the reflection that we're seeing whenever he looks down behind him. So, let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
In the final scene, Nacho seems sure of himself for the first time in a long time. He rides along to the meeting place and takes matters in his own hands for the last time.
Oh. What a great scene.
Amazing scene. Good acting. Oh, the tension. And seeing him with that piece of glass from the very beginning, like, oh, fuck. Nacho's gonna Nacho.
I just wonder where he got the glass. Do you have any idea? Was it in this episode? Like, oh, he broke a bottle? Because I expect it to be more meaningful, right? That's why I look at the beginning scene and I go, where's the meaning here? Because in even Breaking Bad, in these type of shows, and this is a thing that they do often, the implement used to get out of a situation will be important for a different reason.
Right. It already has like some intrinsic story to it already.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when they use it, you're like, oh, that's the thing that they did in this other thing. And boy, that adds meaning and layers to this scene, but they don't have that here. And so I'm very confused. And that's why when I go back to the beginning, I look at that scene, I'm like, well, there's something lacking here.
I see.
If they had shown me that bottle piece, or I don't even know if it's a bottle piece. It looks like a bottle.
It's pretty
a piece
curved.
Of bottle to me.
Yeah.
But if they show me that piece of glass, and then over the course of this episode, Nacho had done something with a bottle or a piece of glass or something, and then at the end he uses it, I would have been like, okay, that has a lot more meaning to it.
Well, this makes me wonder. I wonder if that very first scene they're trying to sort of manufacture that feeling for you a little bit, because they don't really have either time or whatever to actually show you like the origin of this piece of glass. So maybe they're just trying to give you some kind of bookend that you would normally have with these faded objects in Breaking Bad. But you're right. It is a little, the story of the bottle of the glass is very shallow.
Yeah. It's just absent as far as I can tell. Yeah. But I don't know. It doesn't ruin the scene by any means. Like,
still,
so he has a piece of glass and he uses
it. Amazing, affecting scene. Yeah.
Yeah. It is still amazing. And Michael Mando is great. He drops an F-bomb in this scene on Hector and just blows him up.
Oh, man. Talk about Kim with the tax people in the last episode. Uh-huh. Very similar feeling with
the kettlebells.
Yeah. The kettlebells, yeah. Very similar feeling with, I almost called him Michael, Nacho, and Hector, because that person is also a huge piece of shit, just in a different way. And he gets told off, and that's very cathartic.
Yep. It's the perfect time to, you know, because they don't get many F-bombs, right? This is still a show that airs on terrestrial television or whatever.
Fair. Yeah.
You have to avoid the censors. And so they can only really do like one of these. I think they try and do like one of these a season, maybe. We're coming to the last season here, but to drop an F-bomb on network television is actually still a pretty big deal.
Gotcha.
And so I feel like they picked the perfect time to do it, because
if not now, when?
This is big.
For sure. This is huge. This is not just kind of his last defining moment, but it's the last moment for his character, period.
Yeah. And it's crazy how early this happened too. I was
season
shocked.
Three, yeah, I feel like this is kind of like a mid, it's like the first third of the show finale.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's 13 episodes total. So yeah, we're still in like the first quarter of the final season.
Right.
And they're dropping important bodies. It's crazy.
Very important bodies. Yeah, I will say I wasn't expecting him to go this early on.
That's what kind of made me think, like in those scenes where they're planning, you know,
right?
they're laying out the plan. I'm like, okay, but where's
the
twist?
Again.
Right. No. And there is a twist. It's just he goes out on his own terms.
He goes out on his own terms. He uses that piece of glass not only to cut his bonds, but also stab Bulsa right in his meaty thigh.
Oh, does he?
That's the first thing he did. And Bulsa was like, oh, my thigh. And then he used that moment to grab Bulsa's gun and put it up against his head. And that whole time, I'm thinking, like, just do both. Two birds, one stone. Just kill him, too. He sucks. Yeah. But I guess he doesn't suck enough. Or maybe he wants. He did do, I will say this, even though his tirade was basically what Gus told him to say, other than maybe the Hector stuff. Mm-hmm. He was giving Gus a lot of pointed looks.
I was worried. Yeah. When he starts looking over at Gus, I'm like, they're going to know. But Hector already knows.
Hector already suspects.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why he doesn't want to kill Bolsa. Like, he wants Gus's back to be on fire a little bit for the rest of this, for the rest of the season. I did hear in I think it was either the first episode of the Insider Cast or maybe it was a preview or something, but I heard Giancarlo Esposito say that his character is going to be different in this season, in the sense that he's got a lot of pressure on him and he can't do as much of his normal Gus stuff.
I mean, if you look at where we pick up with him in Breaking Bad, there has to be a lot of pressure on him because he does some crazy shit just right off the bat when we first meet him.
Exactly. And I think, now we're kind of seeing the background of some of those decisions.
Yeah.
Why he was pushed so hard.
Mm-hmm. Kind of adding on to what you said about like maybe wanting to keep Bolsa alive, I wonder if he realizes that without Juan Bolsa, it's just all out war between Hector and Gus.
That's fair.
And Bolsa that his dad might get caught in the crossfire. Juan Bolsa like has the authority to tell these guys, settle the fuck down.
Right. Zeladio's like right-hand man or whatever.
And he's a much cooler head than Hector, obviously. And he's Gus, dumber,
honestly,
too. Which,
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, Hector's a hothead. He's violent. He's impulsive, but also
he's suspicious.
He's smart. So maybe he wanted to keep him alive to keep things from escalating after he's gone and potentially taking his dad out in the crossfire.
Right.
That might make some sense.
That's a fair point.
But yeah, I was shocked because I wanted him to kill Bolsa too in the moment. I'm like, just shoot this guy. Why
just
not?
Just do it. Yeah, you're on your way out anyway.
Yeah. Especially after he shot himself. I'm like, why didn't you shoot Bolsa?
Yeah. And I think
and Mike was up on the ridge saying, do
Mike
it.
Mike was like, do it. Do it.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun.
Yep. Yeah, it's a great scene. Michael Mando is incredible in it.
He goes full like rabid dog toward the end of his his tirade of word poison, basically.
Yeah, totally.
It was very satisfying. I'm really sad that we're not going to have his character anymore.
Yep.
So Nacho has been the one that we've wanted out, right? We've wanted him to get out. Yeah, we've been rooting for him to turn aside from his life of crime. Who is that character for us now? Or do we just not have that? Is it Kim? Are you sure it's Kim? Because she's kind of...
not entirely at this point. I still like Kim. I
still like her too.
I don't know. She's not headed out the door. She's headed in the opposite direction, as far as I can tell.
I feel like she is digging herself a little bit of a like moral hole, because she is going to have to live with everything that she does after.
Mm-hmm.
Even when she and Jimmy were first talking about the Howard scheme, he was like, you're not going to be okay with this. And that was like, that's the last line of the last episode of the season, I think, last season was, well, wouldn't I?
And then finger guns.
Yeah. Terrible finger guns.
Yeah. No, it's, I don't know who I'm rooting for at this point. Jimmy, I guess. Gene a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. I'm going to see what he feels like he still needs to be protecting.
Yeah.
Why he cares.
We know Mike and Gus and Victor and Tyrus all make it out.
Right.
We know Jimmy makes it out. Kim's the only one who... We know Hector makes it out. We know the cousins make it out. We know, like, so much about where this can go.
I guess it was really only ever Kim and Nacho.
Yeah, it's kind of Kim and Nacho. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens with Kim.
How do you feel about the fact that Kim wears blue like a lot? Like a lot. It's kind of her defining color.
Just
because
it was mandated by Howard.
It's just
because
she's blonde, right?
Oh, no, yeah, it's a Ham Lindigo. Right? Yeah.
Ham Lindigo.
She had a particular uniform that she had to wear.
Sure. She's still wearing blue now, though.
Oh. Well,
she, I don't even know.
It's tough to change your entire wardrobe overnight.
That's fair. What are you going to do? Just buy a bunch of clothes that aren't blue?
Right.
Yeah.
Spend $60,000 on her wardrobe. I don't know about that. All right.
Can I? Okay. I have one question. Mm-hmm. I have one question about this scene, this final scene. Why did the cousins pick up Hector's wheelchair and carry him over to Nacho's body?
Quicksand. There was a strip of quicksand
that you could walk across but not wheel across.
Very narrow strip of quicksand.
Okay.
No, you're right. I guess it's just really hard to push a wheelchair through sand. I don't know. I've never messed
hard pack
with much wheelchair stuff, but
I haven't either, but man, it seems easier than where do you even, what do you grab on a wheelchair? I guess you have to grab the seat. I don't know.
I mean, this is like a Persian or Egyptian kind of respect sort of thing.
Oh, God, I guess.
They lift him on his dais.
Leave wheelchair tracks in the desert. Who can say?
Oh, yeah. No.
No. That was a joke. Don't agree to
you
that.
You just kick sand over wheelchair tracks. It's not a big deal.
Yes.
I don't know.
And then he takes a bunch of pot shots. Yeah. Not just dead body. And
all the way through the credits.
All the way through the credit. Basically, yeah, the seed like fades to black and we're still here and pot shot sounds. Ugh, so sad.
Yep.
But that's the end of the episode.
Died young, did not leave a good looking corpse.
Did not. Full of holes. Left a Swiss cheese corpse.
Yep. All right, that's it for the episode. We've got some feedback to get to. We have some stuff from previous episode, and we have some stuff, or the previous two episodes, and stuff from this episode. So let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
We start off with Tommy O, and this is going to be stuff from last two episodes to begin here, and the preview podcast. It says in the preview podcast, Jim and Pete mentioned a few things that got me wondering, especially after some things you guys brought up in the first couple of episodes. Is it possible Kim's play in marrying Jimmy is part of a long con of her own to use him to get the Sandpiper money and then take it for herself? Oh, the conner becomes the conned.
Not bad.
In the preview, Jim and Pete mentioned how it was the exact opposite thing he expected for her to do, how Jimmy's cons usually make the person being conned think it's their idea, and were questioning what would make Jimmy care only about money. Then, in the first two episodes, you guys question if Kimmy is trying to punish Jimmy, how she may be thinking he's too soft, and how her expressions have changed. A long con would certainly make Jimmy never trust anyone again. The only thing I see hard to square with that plan is that she seems to genuinely care about Jimmy. I don't know. What's the over-under? Or how are you feeling about the idea that Kim might be conning Jimmy?
You know, as a theory, I do like it.
Yeah.
Because some of her reactions have still felt authentic with him, but many, many others have not.
Yeah.
They've not been reading as authentic to me. And I think you could be onto something.
Maybe.
And that would definitely make somebody not give a shit about anybody else again, probably.
I mean, the hilarious thing, if it turns out that's true, like the hypocrisy of it, right?
Yeah.
Because Jimmy conned Kim and said, I did it for your own good or for the, look, we won the case. What does it matter? Like it was perfect. You played right into it and it looked real.
Mm-hmm.
And so if she turned around and conned him and he got all pissy about it, it would look hilariously hypocritical.
Oh yeah, totally.
But he could probably be that way. I don't know.
Hypocritical?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it probably runs in the blood.
Yeah. All right, Josiah says, hello, my name is Josiah.
Hello, Josiah.
And I think that either Nacho or Kim, well, okay, one part of this has already come true. I think Nacho or Kim will die in the mid-season finale.
Yep.
So let's, I guess, consider the Kim part.
Sure.
He says, probably Kim, then the second half of the season will be Saul starting to do much worse things because he isn't processing his emotions about Kim or Chuck.
Hmm.
Also, I think Howard might kill himself, or maybe Saul and Kim accidentally get him murdered by someone in the cartel. That's interesting. Like I said, with this plan with Howard, I think it needs to be something beyond the pale that makes us end up not on the side of either Kimmy. God damn it. Either Kim or Jimmy.
Yeah.
Right? I kind of want to end up hating one of them by the end of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And enough that, like, I don't feel the journey was not worth it, but something bad enough to just make me angry at one of them.
I agree.
Also hoping there is a full Gene episode to conclude his story and hope they have something cool planned for Walt and Jesse. Thank you for making podcasts. It makes work less boring. I do hope we get a satisfying resolution to the Gene stuff. That's like the number one thing I want to hit this season.
I don't know why, but I'm feeling very strongly that we will.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be good.
The fact that they didn't do an opening Gene scene
makes
me think they've got something big in store.
I wonder, I'm just spitballing now. I wonder if it'll be a significant portion of like the last episode.
Probably.
Oh, that would be a really nice end cap, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to the entire series. I mean, as much as like El Camino is the cap for Jesse.
Exactly.
This could be it for Saul. All right, Nicole says, there are a few female characters on TV that have their own agency, identity, and presence that exist separate from male characters or cliches. I appreciate that the Villa Gang, is that a term that we use here?
That's the term you've used, okay. For sure.
Was able to learn from their mistakes with writing for Skylar and really develop Kim into the force she is. In any other show, she would have... she would be marked with a pregnancy storyline or spending her days getting mansplained by Kevin Howard, etc. Luckily, the Better Call Saul world doesn't waste time on that. Kim is already in control of her life, and we get to spend more time watching Ray Seahorn crushing it. She should probably take most of the credit. Her work really isn't getting the award credit she deserves. I think has she gotten nominated? I feel like she might have been nominated one year. Or she's certainly gotten some Baldy love. I know that much. In our award show, she definitely has.
Yeah. No, I'd have to look up whether she's been nominated for anything else. But generally speaking, yeah, I think you're right. She is really bringing so much to the show.
Oh, yeah.
And I, just speaking as a 33-year-old woman here, I really like the way that they do her makeup on the show because they are not like... really trying to fill her pores or anything like that. She just looks like a natural woman with some makeup on.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really...
not a TikTok filter or something.
Yeah, no, it's good to see. It's good to see people just like age, like yeah. People do.
Right.
Because everybody ages.
Like Bryan Cranston. Right? I mean, they didn't do anything to him.
I don't know if there's anything they could have done for him. He's a great actor.
Yeah.
His face. It's fine.
I agree. Kim has been excellent, and Ray Seahorn has been excellent as that character.
I'm glad that they've written a character that does have her own agency, and that has us all, like, biting our nails in this last season. Like, oh, God, how bad is this going to be when it finally goes off?
Yeah.
When we see the end result of whatever this thing is that they're cooking up.
And they've always shown her to be maybe even more than a match for Jimmy. You know, like he's the con man at the beginning and she's exasperated by his stuff. But when she gets into it, she's kind of even better at this than he is.
She never slouches.
Yeah.
Something I notice about her. She always has a very upright posture. And I feel like that's her personality too. She's just very like tough. She's tough. She's a very tough person.
Nicole goes on. What was this the first time we've seen Kim manipulate Jimmy? I get Walter White vibes from her using the Cathedral of Justice to entice him into falling in line with her schemes. I am so anxious to see where her storyline goes. As long as she doesn't dragon burn Albuquerque to the ground, I expect any ending will be fully satisfying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I feel like this is the first time she's manipulated him. She's tried to manipulate him. I think... she's tried to direct him several times and in less, you know, manipulative ways. Like I remember when he came to her and is like, hey, we need to get Huel off the hook here. What can you do? And I'm going to go do this crazy thing. She's like, no. I've got a better idea.
Right.
And she doesn't like try and trick him into it. She's just like, we can do this together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, she seems more like she's manipulating him.
She's using more Jimmy tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Does feel a lot like she... is kind of using his whole deal against him this time around. And that's probably going to blow up in everybody's face. It'll be fun to watch.
All right. Jack says, this gave me a giggle when I thought about it. In the scene in episode 2 where Nacho is escaping the motel, he's trying to hotwire the truck when one of the Salamanca thugs see him and opens fire. Nacho kills him, and then a second thug starts shooting from behind the truck until one of the cousins shoots him and announces to the rest, vivo, or alive. Okay, so they need to take Nacho alive. The shooting stops. At this moment, the cousins are maybe 50 feet away from Nacho's truck. Call it 7 parking spots away. Nacho's full fumbling with the car wires, and the cousins have zero urgency. They just start walking in their normal tough twin gait routine. If one of them had so much as slightly jogged, they easily would have caught Nacho. But they're so damn committed to their intimidating, synchronized walking pattern that they miss their window. It's neither here or there. I don't need this show to prove itself to me. Just thought it was a silly moment. And the title, the subject line of this email was, can the cousins even run?
That is an interesting point that I'd like to expand into a broader point with something I've noticed with both Breaking Bad and I almost called it Breaking Saul. No, that's nothing. Better Call Saul.
Uh-huh.
Is that the main characters are written beautifully. They're very complex. They feel like real people, but a lot of the time, some of those third tier characters are just paperboard cutouts of people,
basically. Totally.
And I feel like the cousins are absolutely 1000% that. They don't really. We saw them have like a moment of emotion with Lalo's Scarecrow's corpse. But otherwise, yeah, their job is to be boogeymen, basically.
Also, you try Shiny running boogeyman. In those boots. There's no fucking way they're going to trip over their own toes.
Or they're going to like bend the middle part and it's going to look all weird.
Yeah, those are expensive boots.
Those are expensive boots.
I don't even think they can run in them.
Those skull caps are so cool.
Might be right.
Kick a door open with those.
All right.
That's not how you kick.
Sala? Sorry, I apologize. I don't know how to say your name. Says, they didn't mention anything about this on Insider's podcast, but still, isn't the if you don't know how to get out of trouble, just take your clothes off trick a reference to Breaking Bad and Walter losing his memory? The fugue state. We all remember that.
Yeah.
At least I laughed when I realized the connection. Thanks for the great podcast. And by the way, your voices match perfectly.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I'm loud, you're quiet.
Oh, yeah? Is that it? Do we sound alike? I'm going to be thinking about this for hours.
Well, it's I'm better baffled. Than thinking about Walter White's fugue state for hours.
It's shiny white hiney. Yeah, sure. Oh, no, the tidy whiteys. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Every time I see his first couple of episodes.
It's a great opening to a great show.
It is.
All right, Chris says, I just want to let you know that you forgot to mention the Native American man who is getting his refund check at the Kettleman's tax trailer was the man that Walter White buys the truck from in the beginning of the Ozymandias episode.
Holy shit.
In fact, you even see the truck when Saul pulls up to the trailer.
Huh. Whoops.
Yeah, and listening to Behind the Scenes podcast, Vince Gilligan said they tried to squeeze as many cameos from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul in this last season. Who are you most excited to see again? Personally, I would like to see more scenes with Badger, Skinny Pete, and Combo together sprouting some random Star Trek fan fiction.
Sure. They should start a podcast.
Who could it be? Who would I want to see? I mean, Combo... I don't know. I love Badger and Skinny Pete. They're great.
I'm trying to think of, any characters that I have any kind of emotional attachment to from Breaking Spooge. Bad. Excuse me.
Spooge. You know, the one who crushed his wife with an ATM or got crushed by an ATM.
Come again. That's a joke. Spooge.
I feel dirty.
Yeah, I know. ATM crush. Smash. Yes.
How about Brock?
Trying to think, third tier characters in Breaking Bad are not really all that amazing.
Jane's dad.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah. Just send one of our characters to the airport.
To the airport, and then somehow have that have anything to do with the flight tower.
Well, he's on his lunch break. He comes down, gets something at at Chipotle, P.F. Chang's.
What's that? There's some kind of Mexican restaurant that's something express.
Panda. Not Mexican.
Chili's. I think there's like a Chili's Express or whatever that's in airports sometimes.
You can make it happen.
I haven't been in an airport in a long time, man.
Since before the pandemic.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, that's who I'd like to see. We'll see if it happens. I doubt it.
Chili Express.
I'd like to see Chipotle Express. All right, Mike writes in and says, I believe you missed the... Oh, nope. This is just him backing up the fact that that car showed up. He wasn't sure if it was the same guy, but I guess it is.
Gotcha. Sorry about that.
Eric from Massachusetts, MA. Quick note, in season 5, episode 7, JMM, Nacho and Gus burn down a Los Pollos, but it's not the Albuquerque one. It's the one in Las Lunas. I've heard y'all a couple times talk about the ABQ one having been torched. He included a couple of pictures. The door being labeled Los Pollos Hermanos Las Lunas. And we mentioned it again that poor Lyle is on unemployment. Worry not, BCS fans, he says. Our fearless fry cook, cleaner, scrubber guy character lives on to scrub another day.
Assistant manager.
Shows a picture of him, yeah.
Perfect.
And then says, besides, if they did burn down the ABQ Poyos, how could I have visited in December of 2020? And shows a picture of him next to the logo.
Oh, man. Is that... Wait. It's just a building, right? It's not like an actual place that sells food.
No, it's a real restaurant, yeah.
Excuse me?
It's not called Los Poyos Hermanos. I forget what it's called.
And I haven't eaten it yet?
Yeah.
What the hell?
You can go on the Breaking Bad tour. You can get in. You can get into the trailer.
Let's, one, watch Breaking Bad again, because you definitely have time for that. And two, let's go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, because you also definitely have time for that. And let's eat some chicken. Fuck yeah.
It sounds good to me.
I think I'm just hungry. Sorry, guys.
I've been to that same Los Poyos. I've stood in front of that same sign.
I know, you've been on the tour. Yeah,
I think I have a picture of me in front of that same sign.
Oh my goodness, baby boy Jim.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
I bet you were shaving.
I was. All right, Eric Y says, from the sounds of it, everyone is developing their own theory on who was tailing Jimmy and Kim at the end of episode two. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if it's one of the cops that Jimmy name dropped Lalo by accident in the courthouse. Mm. Yes, yeah. I think after seeing this episode.
That's a fair point.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does. Somebody tall for sure, and they both look pretty tall. So.
Yeah. All right, let's get on to the episode three feedback for this episode.
Yay.
Judah writes in and said, hey, glad to have you podcast back for the last season of BCS. Can't wait to hear what you two have to say about all the crazy stuff that's bound to happen. And given the ending of episode three, RIP Nacho, an ending that I thought was extremely well done and really one of the more meaningful deaths in Better Call Saul, and even rivaling some notable deaths in Breaking Bad, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on where you imagine Nacho's story going this season. I didn't necessarily expect him to make it through the entire season, but I would not have guessed the story would come to a close three episodes in. Any disappointments in how the death was handled, or did this make sense as an end to his story? He says, I'm glad they didn't drag this out, his story out too long. There didn't seem to be a lot of places for it to go, but I wish we could have gotten a little more of him before the series ended.
I would have liked a couple more episodes, I think, at least. It seems a little early for me, but it also, in terms of the story, it makes sense for it to be where it is. It totally makes sense. And it's a very... They talked about this a little on the Insider podcast, but it is a very kind of romantic ending for a character who was sort of a romantic character. I don't mean in the hugs and kisses kind of way. I mean in the traditional sense of just very emotional, very strong core values.
Mm-hmm.
And believed in things, including self-sacrifice, which is admirable.
Yeah. No, I wanted him to live.
I wanted him to live, but I could see.
But it did make sense that he couldn't live.
Yeah.
And so this way of taking him out was A-okay with me.
And at least he did get to add his own twist to it, like he has been since the first time he showed up on our screens.
I mean, the real tragedy is going to be, if they really want to break our hearts, they could have his father get killed anyway.
Yeah.
And have the sacrifice be for absolutely nothing.
That would be terrible.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I really hope Mike gives him his Canadian ID, but also, would he even take it?
No.
His dad is so stubborn. I know Nacho saw him as this, like... the ultimate example of like goodness in the world, but he's also a super, super stubborn person. And I don't even think he would run if he was given the option.
I don't think so.
I mean, he turned down someone else buying his business.
Mm-hmm.
He kept trying to turn down the cartel.
No, yeah. Probably wouldn't. I could still see him getting killed.
I could still see him getting killed too. And that would hurt. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would hurt me.
So,
I hope that doesn't happen.
We'll see. Dave in North Carolina says, Nacho nearly drowned in oil, rode under the baseboards of a tractor trailer in the pitch black for hours, took a voluntary beating from Mike and broke his collarbone. Oh, he was thrown out of a van. Really? I didn't pick up on that. Maybe that's a joke. I don't know, but I didn't pick up on
it. He was thrown out pretty roughly.
All to sacrifice himself to save his father. Yet the worst indignity was that Gus makes him eat his last meal with a plastic fork and knife.
See?
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm telling you, man. Not only that, but not even on a plate. It was in like the takeout container still. Like,
oh my God, with the sides and everything?
Yes, exactly. See?
How do you cut a steak up against those sides?
Cutting a steak with plastic knife.
Never.
Plastic sides. It's just not happening.
She just picked it up with his hands.
She's just eating it like a badger. Yeah.
Yeah. A rabid one. The chicken man truly is a cold-hearted bastard, says Dave.
I agree, Dave.
Reginald says, here are my initial reactions to Rock and a Hard Place. I was hoping all the way to the end that Nacho and Mike and or Mike would find a way to keep Nacho alive. Yeah. That, of course, was never going to happen. But even though he died at the end, I'm glad Nacho went out on his own terms. He did three important things. One, secured his father's safety. Two, died without any long, drawn-out torture. And three, finally told off Hector.
Stuck it to the man, yeah.
And to a lesser extent, Gus, yeah.
Mm-hmm. With his eyes. He was telling Gus off with his eyes, for sure.
It's like the opening scene of all that depressing desert. In the midst of all that brown decay, there still was a lovely blue flower that was beautiful and stood erect. Is that the poetry? Is that the meaning that I've been searching for in that scene? Get all this
Nacho
terrible,
is the
dried
bluebell.
Up shit.
Yeah. Nacho is the bluebell. He's the bloom in the desert.
Yeah, I'm sticking with my initial impression. There's nothing there. It's a hollow, empty scene.
Stubborn like a stubborn like a baby like a cartel member's papa. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Also, Reginald wrote in twice. Nacho's fatal flaw finally catches up to him in Rock and a Hard Place. His naivete causes the most harm to himself and others. In episode 2, Nacho expresses concern for the normals at Lalo's estate. Nacho really believed that these innocent people wouldn't wind up being collateral damage when he let an army of paid killers into Lalo's compound. Nacho really believes that an elderly ex-cop, even as one as resourceful as Mike, is going to be able to protect his father from two ruthless international drug rings. Yeah, maybe Gus and his group don't care about Papa anymore, but the dozens of shells Hector pumped into Nacho's corpse shows the Salamancas aren't above senseless, violent revenge.
That's true, and that's why we're a little worried for Papa now.
Right. Nacho always thought he could play around in the drug game but remain above the nasty parts of it.
Yeah.
Remember when he reluctantly beat up Crazy Eight?
Yep.
I do. Hector had to remind Nacho with the words, who works for who? But just like when he baptized himself in that oil, when he hid in that abandoned tanker, Nacho voluntarily chose a life that made him dirty.
Oh, that's an interesting choice of words. I like it.
Worst thing is that his choices also hurt other people. Yeah. 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 I mean, that's the thing. You know, that's why we call him the criminal with the heart of gold. Because, he's still doing bad things. And Walter White was that way for a long time, too, right?
While.
Like, he got into it for very good reasons. He didn't want to leave his family with no money. When he died of cancer in like a year or 6 months or whatever it was.
Which is noble, I think.
Totally.
And I think we all kind of start that show on his side because of that. Like, okay, drugs are bad, but also we understand why you're doing this and it seems like a noble thing.
Right. And then eventually his reason for doing it changed.
Yeah.
Nacho's didn't.
He stayed.
His reason was always money for money's sake. It wasn't, oh, Nacho's sick or his dad needs medical treatment or the business is failing and he can't see it happen. Yeah, it wasn't anything like that. It was just money.
No, he just wanted to get a little further ahead in the world. But unfortunately, he wanted to have his cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
And you just can't do that in the Breaking Bad universe.
Apparently not.
Not long enough.
All right, Dan J says, have you considered that doing a full dental extraction and implant in a person's mouth is a lot more trouble than sending the guy in to have his own teeth checked and recorded onto Lalo's dental records?
Oh.
Seems much less painful, less difficult, and less expensive. Yeah, just swap some papers.
Sure.
But it wasn't Lalo's pain.
That's true.
And he's got money. He clearly doesn't care about money. Like every time Jimmy's thinking up a outrageous number that he can charge him for his legal advice, Lalo's like, sure.
Yeah, $7 million was also nothing to.
Right.
He was like, paid, done.
I guarantee it didn't cost $7 million to replace this guy's teeth.
Probably not.
Probably
but
like
boy, I bet
80
that's
grand.
An expensive procedure, even in Mexico.
Oh, yeah. Just have the vet do it. The vet will get it done. replace them with dog teeth.
Oh, no. Oh, man. We just... Okay, sorry. This is making me think of a movie that we just watched the other night. The gun that shoots teeth.
Oh.
What?
Existenz.
Existenz.
Yeah.
What a weird fucking movie.
What a weird movie. All right. Lisa W. says, a shot of the red ant on the fingers of the dead man last time. This was not the Lalo double. I thought we might have said it was the Lalo double.
Oh, no. It was the walkie-talkie corpse outside, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, the one who got hit in the face with hot oil.
It was the apparently. One who Lalo made to make the call, I think, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was the guy who got hit with the hot oil, and then he came out, and he was the last one left alive.
Yeah.
Hence and, yeah, he made him make the call.
Burning on the face. Yeah, no, sorry if we imply that that was Lalo. Lalo? God, why is that so hard to say?
Yeah, makes sense. David says, is the valet guy in this episode the taxi driver who recognizes Saul at the Cinnabon timeline? Or does he just have one of those faces?
I think he's just got one of those faces. That
yeah.
The person in the gene timeline is a more square face, I think. Has a face that almost... You know what? He looks a lot like... oh, God. See, this is the problem with me. I can't remember celebrity names. Okay, so he's the dude who gets eaten by the little dinosaurs in Jurassic Park 2.
The compies? Oh, you're talking about Peter Stormare?
Yeah, he looks a little... Just a little there's a little bit of the Peter Stormare, maybe just in the eyes with that guy.
Slightly.
Yeah, and I didn't...
Floppy hair.
Yeah, he's got similarly intense eyes, I would say.
Gotcha.
But not the same person.
I don't think it's the same person, though, you know, it's a lot of years apart, and casting being what it is... Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, if that was their intention, they will make it a little more obvious later.
Yeah.
Guy says, so if I have this straight, Gus puts in place this very complicated and risky plan with Nacho and the motel. Nacho could have been captured on the way, should have been captured by the Salamancas, and ultimately escaped. Gus never seemed to have any intention of letting Nacho live, so why didn't he just tell his guys to slit Nacho's throat the second he opened the gate? Am I missing something here? I think you are. I think the missing piece here and the thing that it took me a second to realize too. So Gus needs him to point the finger at someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't, then it's kind of going to be left up to Hector to convince Bolsa that that was the guy.
Right.
And I think he's hoping that he can convince Hector that it wasn't him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a little futile and it doesn't seem to really work in this episode. But that's the thing, right? He can't just kill Nacho because he needs somebody to vouch that it wasn't him.
He needs somebody to vouch that it wasn't him. He also has this really impressive, reliable guy on his payroll right now that he will probably lose immediately if he...
Mike.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. If he will lose Mike, if he... makes it if he doesn't give Nacho as many outs as he possibly can.
I think you're right. We've seen Mike come to Gus several times and say like, hey, Nacho's been true to his word. He's done everything you've asked. Let's let him out of this.
Yep.
He wants out. And Gus has always been like, yeah, but.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. It's two things. It's a combination of that stuff.
It's impressive. It's impressive that Mike can be so reliable that even a person like Gus is willing to like alter his plans a little bit to benefit him.
Well, good help's hard to find.
Sure.
C writes in and says, hey guys, firstly, thanks for all you do. Definitely a staple in the BCS diet. Here's my question. Considering how this is all playing out and we're almost into Breaking Bad territory, how would you have preferred the story to be told? Number one, the way they've done it, Breaking Bad and then the prequel, where we know the fate of several characters but have these wonderful pre-Easter eggs and gene sequences to figure out. Or two, Better Call Saul first, where you wouldn't know what happened to Saul, Gus, Mike, etc., but didn't have the beautiful puzzle of fitting Kim, Nacho, Lalo, etc. into an ending that you already know. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
It's a difficult question because that just isn't how we experienced it in the first place.
Yeah.
We have done Breaking Bad and then Better Call Saul. If I had to choose again, I think I might still do it the same way. Because in some ways, Better Call Saul does feel like as much as it is setting up the Saul Goodman character, it's also a little bit of a, I don't know, it's weird to call it a denouement when it is a prequel, but it is also just a little bit more for us fans after the brilliance that was Breaking Bad. I think we're all still pretty thirsty for something that was sort of similar to that, and we're getting that with Better Call Saul. I don't know that it would feel quite the same if I had done Better Call Saul first and then Breaking Bad. What do you think?
And to add on to that, I don't know that I would have done Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul if Breaking Bad didn't exist, because Breaking Bad came out at a time where television isn't what it was, you know? Like, Better Call Saul came out at a time when television had kind of changed, and Breaking Bad had contributed to the changing landscape of television to where there was just a ton of really good stuff on, and there still is. TV continues to get better and better. Without Breaking Bad putting me into this universe and sucking me in 2002 or whenever the hell it came out, 2004, I don't even know. I'm not sure I would have tried Better Call Saul, and I bet a lot of people wouldn't. And I'd hear it as like this prestige show from critics that's very good, but there might not be the chatter about it online that gets me to watch these actual really good shows.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I wonder, for my part, if I would have even been interested in a show that from the outside looks a lot like a law procedural, at least in the first few seasons.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that stuff.
Like, how do you sell this show without Breaking Bad? Because it's very easy with Breaking Bad. You just say, this is the prequel to Breaking Bad, and it's a character you love, so come check it out.
Right.
What is this show? Like, how do you advertise and get people interested in this show without that?
Yeah, it would be a much smaller show without Breaking Bad, for sure.
And Breaking Bad had that build. Like, Breaking Bad kept getting more popular as it aired, which is strange in the television landscape. Like, most shows have their most popular seasons up front and then diminish, like Walking Dead.
I knew you were going to say Walking Dead.
Even if they're great shows, like, people just, you know, life gets in the way. They lose interest for one reason or another.
Of Walking Dead. Yeah.
Breaking Bad was the exception to that, where it just kept growing and growing and growing. I feel like Better Call Saul would have to do that, but it would have a bigger uphill battle than Breaking Bad did. Because Breaking Bad is just this propulsive show that every single episode is just driving you to the neck to watch the next episode, to tune in next week. Better Call Saul can be like that, but it's a much slower burn than Breaking Bad. Watch the pilot of Breaking Bad again and tell me that show does not just press the gas and never let off.
It goes from 0 to 60 and then it just keeps going.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I guess I maybe hadn't seen a lot of prestige television at that point. It was early on in my relationship that I watched Breaking Bad. It was long after it had already been out. And I couldn't believe just the pacing of it, just how constant and never letting up it was. And then whenever you hit those episodes that were kind of slow, it's like, oh, thank God. I need some breathing room. Yeah, and this show doesn't quite have that same momentum. It is a lot more thoughtful, I think.
Totally.
There's still a lot of action that happens, but it is more a thinking show.
Yeah, it has like a lot of the elements of Breaking Bad, but they're a little bit muted, and then it adds its own element, its own style, which is slower, and that's not necessarily going to grab people as easily. So, like I said, I don't know that Better Call Saul ever grabs me as a viewer unless Breaking Bad has already happened.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right, Simon is up next. He says, was that the best episode of Better Call Saul ever?
No.
Up there with Ozymandias. Wait. Up there with Ozymandias. Ooh, the most powerful adversary from Leftovers. Oh, man. Mentioning some very good episodes here. These are the only other times that when I've switched off TV off, stared at the wall for 10 minutes and thought, what the fuck? Michael Mando was brilliant. Yes, he was. Best episode of Better Call Saul. Man, I love. Because I think it's all in the same episode. Maybe it's not. Is the stuff with Acker where he brings him the picture of the man fucking the horse and the yup.
Yup.
Is that all in the same episode?
You know,
or are they back to back?
I don't think it is, but I think they are back to back. That Mesa Verde stuff really is condensed into just a few episodes.
I have a hard time picking my favorite of those two.
Well, those are moments, though, moments in that episode. What's the rest of the episode? See, question mark.
I think it's... So here's the trouble I have, because I think the episode where... The Yup episode, whatever it's called, where Jimmy betrays Kim...
By showing that... smear ad that he makes against Mesa Verde.
Absolutely hilarious, but it's also absolutely heartbreaking. Like the way they combine those two
that was
feels
a really good
in those scenes is incredible. But I think that's also the episode where at the very end, Kim says we should get married. And I don't like that moment. I don't understand that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Pete and I talked about it in the preview episode, and I get where he's coming from. That's never sat right with me for Kim as a character. So I'm torn, right? Because I think it has like one of the absolute best moments in Better Call Saul, but it also has one of the ones I don't understand.
That's fair.
But it might still be my favorite episode. I don't know.
It's a good episode. I know a lot of people mention Chicanery as their favorite episode.
Oh, with Chuck's.
With Chuck, the final courtroom scene with Chuck.
The battery and the cell phone and Huel and Rebecca. Yeah.
That's a great one. That's a really good episode too. I'd have a hard time picking between those two.
Yeah. This is up there, though. It's good.
It's up there, for sure. It's a very... I think I'm with you. I think I also had to stare at the wall for 10 minutes after this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Wondering what the hell I was doing with my life. What anybody is doing with their lives.
What?
Just thinking about life, man, and how short it is, and how easy it can end.
Was it because of the goo? Did the goo put you off? Is that the problem?
No, that made me think of Scarlett Johansson. So that made me happy.
Made me think of Star Trek. Next Generation, Tasha Yar.
Oh, yeah.
Gets eaten by the goo monster.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert.
For a 25-year-old.
First season.
Show.
Yeah.
30-year-old.
The first season of a 30-year-old show. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Maria says, so I was so heartbroken when Nacho killed himself. I knew there wasn't really a way for him to get out of it, but I wanted to hope that there was.
Yeah.
My question for you is, how do you think Lalo will catch up to Jimmy and Kim? Or do you think they will cross paths? I wonder if the whole Howard situation will blow up in their face.
It's the fun thing right now is that we don't actually know where Lalo is. We assume that he went back south. Because he decided not to go across the border, but how much time can he spend down there, right? He has to come back north.
What's the purpose? Because that depends, right? Like how much time you can spend on it depends on what he's actually doing.
Right.
Like if he's trying to build a second drug empire or something, like that could take a while. But if he's forgot something at home, like forgot his glasses.
You know what I never even considered?
Hmm.
We were talking about... So we've seen evidence being planted in other places, right? Why couldn't they just manufacture some evidence against Gustavo? Why would they even need to find real evidence? If
they can make Bolsa think it was him.
Exactly. Bolsa and tell the Federale if they want.
So is that with the line, like, there is proof?
Maybe.
Or, you know,
no, it's just
whatever the Spanish word
is. It's just
a
different angle I hadn't thought of until just now. Like, oh, shit, they don't even... need actual evidence, do they?
Yeah, no, you're probably right. As long as they can convince their bosses that it was Gus.
So if he's just down there to plant stuff, then probably doesn't need to be down there all that long.
Yeah, I'm super curious. It's like the number one question I have is what is Lalo doing?
It's a very scary ghost in this season. He was very arrogant, not arrogant. What's the word I'm looking for? When somebody is like...
Aggressive?
Aggressive, thank you. Starts with an A. And has
just
double
now,
letters.
She was making like cat hands and thrusting them at me. I was scared.
Rawr, you know?
Yeah.
Anywho, up until this point, he's been very aggressive, but he's been aggressive in places that we can see him.
Yeah.
And now it's like he's hiding. We don't know where this guy's going to pop out from. Jungle cat.
Drop ceiling.
I'm coming back to it. He's a scary jungle cat.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm excited. I hope it's next episode. I hope we start to get some inkling. You know what? This might have been one of my favorite episodes ever if we had a Jim and Kimmy scam. Kim and Jimmy scam.
Yeah.
I felt like that's what it was missing, right? In the first two episodes, we had one in each of those, and then this one.
That's fair.
That's the two, the yin and the yang that I love about this show is the serious and the deadly threats, and then the comedy and the ridiculous chicanery. Scams. The chicanery, yeah. All right, and finally, Seawells writes in, says, the third episode and Nacho catches a body bag. Man, I am so very sad. I figured him and anyone not Breaking Bad would catch it, but nowhere close to this early. I was certain Mike was going to do something, but as the scene went on and Nacho gave his fuck you opus, I was proud and then realized his dad is safe, so his arc is over.
Yeah.
Bravo, Michael Mando. Didn't know you were one of my favorite characters until you were gone.
He was one of my favorite characters all along.
Yeah.
And so, am I just better than everybody else? That's a meme.
You're ahead of the curve. You were ahead of the curve.
It was just the big brown eyes.
Yeah.
And the eyelashes. But
that's it. It's all the feedback we got. Thank you to everybody who wrote in. If you'd like to send messages in for next week, you can do so at just throw a B, a C, and an S out there somewhere.
In that specific order.
Yeah, and then put a at bald move at the end.
Very casual.
And a .com after like that. BCS@baldmove.com is the address you want to send that stuff to. And until then.
Oh, I saved a bee in my bonnet until the very end of this episode because probably nobody wants to actually hear this. But I think it's worth saying. They put a warning up front about foul language in this episode, but not suicide. That's interesting. That's a choice.
I mean, if kids see people cursing, what kind of life
God.
Is that?
Oh, man, then they might also curse.
Yeah. Oh. Which might lead to more kids cursing, and then you have a whole epidemic of kids.
An epidemic.
Walking around saying, fuck you.
It's a goddamn epidemic. You hate to see it.
Yep.
So.
Do you have a C and an S in that bonnet, too? Or are we done?
Sorry. I guess we can be done. This guy wants to go eat nachos or whatever.
I do. I'm going to break it in the nacho truck. All right. Thanks, everybody. We will see you next week for Better Call Saul. Until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis. Bye.